Hello, welcome to Cherry Beckert's GovCon podcast, where we discuss current government contracting trends, compliance matters, and best practices to guide federal contractors forward. My name is Eric Poppy. I'm a senior manager in Cherry Beckert's government contracting services group. And with me today is Brendan Holleran, also a member of the team. Brendan, do you want to take a quick moment to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Eric. Yeah, Brendan Heller, and I'm another senior manager with our government contract advisory group. And a little bit about my background is I spent a number of years on the government side of things with DCMA. So, you know, it's interesting to talk about the proposal pricing topic as I've, you know, spent a lot of time looking at it from an audit and government evaluation perspective. So it's always interesting to, you know, hear what our clients are running into and kind of talking through some of their issues and concerns and challenges as they, you know, prepare their proposals and costs and pricing to go with it.
You know, thanks for joining. And as you mentioned, today's topic, we'll be talking about proposal pricing and some of those compliance considerations with that. You know, a lot of our clients and a lot of the companies we've talked to recently just went through the flurry of CIO SP4 response and helping to, and that seemed like a very long submission process, you know, starting almost a year ago when the original draft came out, and we're at government year end. So things are, you know, most proposal groups are really trying to turn them out right now, and the government's trying to spend the funds. So just to start us off, do you have any general thoughts on proposal pricing and response to solicitations just from a general high-level compliance perspective?
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, bringing up CIOS before, there are so many stops and starts with that one that, you know, I think it was a very kind of fragmented effort for contractors to focus on some of the amendments and changes to that, that in some cases, you know, you can lose sight of some of the key areas such as, you know, your price and cost volume. So, you know, from a you know, kind of overall standpoint, you really need to make sure that you're addressing, you know, the actual compliance aspect, not only in terms of, you know, complying with, you know, the requirements of the, you know, particular solicitation, you know, but thinking about, you know, your estimating process and systems overall. And, you know, particularly, as you mentioned, with the end of the government fiscal year coming up, you know, you're going to have some really short term efforts, you know, as some of these buying activities are trying to use up funds and finish out their their year planning. So, you know, contractors really do need to, you know, make sure that they're stepping back, you know, and considering, you know, their processes that they have in place, where they may need to kind of address some of the items as they work through their, you know, proposal pricing, and never, you know, really lose sight of, you know, the fact that, you know, each time you're putting a proposal into the government that, you know, you're going to be going through, you know, potentially, you know, a detailed evaluation, you know, from the government price team. You know, but also preparing for, you know, a potential future audit, you know, either of the proposal, you know, or of, you know, of an actual estimating system. So certainly, you know, taking those things into consideration and making sure that you're kind of reinforcing your process as you go through that preparation, you know, is always a good thing for contractors to consider.
Yeah, I think that the compliance piece, a lot of times it's such a quick turn that the compliance piece is kind of left is the back burner item. It's like the, we need to include this, or we need this one certification, or we need to do this one cost or price analysis that needs to be included with a subcontractor that we have to include in the package, because typically it's so much more about the solution versus the compliance and, you know, checking the box exercises. So, you know, one thing that I think is one of the most basic but simple things to make sure that you can limit that exposure is reading the full solicitation and developing a checklist, you know, and having that consistent template that you use that shows the approvals of in the process of putting together that proposal. And you can, you know, incorporate this with your gate reviews, but showing again from the beginning to the end the kind of the controls to have that consistent approach. And then also, I think a big part of that, and using a checklist or another tool like that, you realize it helps you document if there are unique requirements. You know, if there's certified cost and pricing that's required, or any certifications. Do you have to submit your disclosure statement? Do you have to submit a small business plan? Do you have to, is there a 15-2 table? Other ones that we see, again, subcontractors, cost price analysis, SCA, if this is an SCA contract, or Davis-Bacon maybe, and if you have to do any labor category mapping or some. But I think that the use of a checklist or a similar tool can really help to drill down what those unique requirements might be.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And, and speaking to, companies of, varying sizes, smaller groups may not have, a clearly defined or mature estimating system process, simply because they haven't, worked through as many proposals, or, you have folks, wearing many different hats. But, really a simple tool like a checklist, and that's used, in companies of all sizes, it allows you to, as you said, really identify the key requirements. And then it really gives you, that kind of boilerplate working forward to ensure that, you are in fact hitting all the requirements and can check off everything that might need to accompany your price proposal. So, yeah, I mean, it's a really simple tool, and it really kind of lends itself to the development of that, estimating system, all of the controls, the processes, and that's just the value added going forward for each, additional proposal and pricing, volume that you complete. One of the things too, that goes along with that, and the estimating system really pulls, resources and engagement from folks across the organization is, really talking about, what are your BOEs, your basis of estimate, and, how can you consistently, have BOEs that are adequate, that give you that good foundation for a competitive price or cost volume. Eric, what are your thoughts on, some of the things from a compliance perspective, regarding CAS even, like 401 or 402, what are your thoughts that you would, want to highlight to companies as they're thinking through their estimating process?
I think the biggest piece is having that consistent approach and make sure that you don't have really a CAS 401 issue, which is consistency in estimating, accumulating, and reporting costs. So you don't want to, estimate in a way that is not, doesn't talk to the accounting system. So where we see companies sometimes have issues with that would be if you are estimating at a lower level of detail than you're actually accumulating costs, or if, you're inconsistent with your approaches. So if you all of a sudden are developing standards in one instance, but you only collect based off actuals and you don't use standards, or if you, typically that's a good one, but typically if the two sides aren't talking to each other, you want to be consistent with how you accumulate and report your costs versus how you estimate. We could have an entire podcast just on that one topic, but that's probably the big thing. So with that, I think the biggest piece is, are you in line with how you typically estimate other costs, like costs? Is it reasonable? Is it consistent with your disclosed practices? So if you have a disclosure statement or your other cost accounting practices, and then being in line with, you're estimating, if you have an estimating manual, are you consistent with what you've documented there, especially if you have an approved system? But it gets, I think the first part is really understanding, again, what are those requirements in the solicitation? Are labor categories kind of given to you? And do you have to, again, map to those labor categories? How are you identifying maybe for labor, what is the best approach to be competitive with those labor categories? Are you using salary bands? Do you have to source the individuals? But having the correct documentation to support the cost, I think, is the biggest piece. Mm-hmm. You know, we've helped companies get through cost proposal audits, and the one thing that, you know, you don't want the government to think is that you just pulled that cost straight out of the air and plopped it into a proposal. Mm-hmm. You know, there needs to be some type of support behind it. Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think you bring up a lot of good points in terms of, you know, using labor as an example. You know, you may have, you know, predefined labor categories that you have to match, you know, match your existing ones to, and really, you know, understanding are those, you know, the correct resources, do they have the right experience and education qualifications or, you know, whatever those things are, so that not only can you, you know, price it accurately, you know, given the resources that you already have in-house, but, you know, if you have to go out and perhaps, you know, bring in some new hires for, you know, for performance on the contract if you're awarded it. So, you know, you do need to, you know, kind of consider that realism aspect, which the government is, you know, always very concerned about. you know, and then it also helps, you know, for, you know, as companies are doing this more and more, you know, and have increased proposal activity, it really will lend itself to making it easier going forward. So if you are, you know, kind of accumulating that data in terms of, you know, labor category, you know, matches, benchmarking, you know, those are things that, you know, help you to, you know, more accurately, you know, bid, you know, some of that, you know, direct labor element. And so, you know, and also defend it if it comes time, you know, comes down to a, you know, particular proposal audit. You have some similar to examples. You know, you may have some historicals that you can bring in. And, you know, those really do have to demonstrate, like you said, the consistency and have something, you know, have some real information behind it.
You use that key term there, realism. And so, like, for materials, for example, do you have, is there a lead time that you need to factor in, and what's the quote validity if you are getting quotes for your material? Is it actual or is it quoted? And then, you know, is that quote relatively reasonable to historical costs, especially if it's a repeat type buy? Other ones where we see it, subcontractors, for example, I know we touched on this earlier, but is their quote realistic? And did you do any cost or price analysis there? And do you need to? I feel like, you know, the government takes an approach that you as the prime are responsible for that. And a lot of times you're partnering with a sub, especially if you're for, you know, it's the opportunity for to get in with a new agency. It's a strategic partnership. And that's why you're partnering. It's not as much of, you know, the government wants the best price, you know, but you might have picked that sub because you think it gives you a better opportunity to win it. So it's you know, it's different perspectives.
Yeah, no, and really understanding, you know, what level of, you know, analysis you should be doing on, you know, material quotes or subcontractor proposals that you're going to be including, you know, is really key. And one of the things that, you know, is always good to point out, you know, is this may be something that, you know, that a company has, you know, done either similar work or perhaps even some of the same effort. And it's key to understand that you know, you may have some really good historical data in there on material costs or, you know, some of the subcontract effort. And, you know, those are an important piece and certainly should be, you know, a key element of your, you know, cost or price analysis. But you do need to make sure that you're updating that and doing current analysis so that, you know, just because, you know, something costs, you know, X, you know, 3 years ago, you know, is not necessarily, you know, a good indicator of what it's going to be currently or going forward. And, you know, you really do need to kind of reaffirm that, you know, what it costs at that point, you know, can you justify, you know, what was that actually, you know, a good price or cost for it? So, you know, you just need to be a little bit careful about some of that information and make sure that you're doing a current effort to validate it and see like how much weight it should really be given.
Mm-hmm. Very, very good point. Another considerations kind of to that would be indirect rates, and or do you have forward pricing or are you using your actuals or some type of budgeted provisional type rate? And are you incorporating, you know, that potential win of that solicitation into the rates? That's always a question. Escalations is another one that we typically see. A lot of companies will just do the, you know, we're just using a 2% escalation, flatlining it for multiple years. But the government might say, like, well, is that actually realistic? You know, if this is, if there's materials here and we have inflation going on and, you know, what other, well, you know, should you potentially be using a certain indice or, you know, some type of, for that material or for that geographical area?
And, you know, those are, you know, key areas. I mean, indirect rates really constitute such a, you know, significant portion of, you know, the final costs, you know, on contracts that, you know, you really do need to be careful that, for one, you know, obviously, you know, competitiveness is key because you want to, you know, place yourself in a good position to be able to win. But you do need to know what it's going to, you know, what it's going to take to perform, you know, perhaps, you know, a few years out, depending on the contract term or, you know, program effort. And, you know, so you really do want to put some thought into that. Flatlining, you know, rates for out years, you know, can be a little bit risky. And as you mentioned, I mean, you really do need to, in some cases, kind of justify, you know, to, you know, a government, you know, price or cost evaluation, you know, if it's a significant award, you know, that's being contemplated, you know, have you factored that in? Because that will certainly change your, you know, your bases, you know, going forward. And, you know, is that, you know, accounted for? So that's certainly something that, you know, from your pricing strategy and forecasting, you really do need to take that into account. And then, you know, as you mentioned on, you know, indices and escalations, labor is such a big part of so many contracts now, you know, having a checkpoint, you know, not only, you know, what do you need to do internally as a company to, you know, remain competitive and retain employees, you know, in the market. So that's kind of what your actual, you know, historical, you know, merit increases or escalation is. But, you know, having a kind of reference point on that, you know, the government relies heavily on, you know, Global Insights data for, you know, market, you know, index and, you know, escalation rates. So, you know, that is a good tool to make sure that you use that. Again, you know, you can kind of give yourself a, you know, a benchmark and, you know, a comparison to see where you fall and how that's going to be, you know, how that's going to be viewed by government, you know, price and cost evaluation. So, you know, a couple, you know, kind of simple tools, but it really helps you to gauge, you know, is it realistic, one, you know, and two, you know, can you justify it?
Yeah, that's all very good points. And, you know, to close out, do you have, and I'm going to throw this one right back at you, fee, profit, you know, the that thing that everyone talks about and the whole goal of working with the government is that, you know, it's a consistent fee. And just, but do you have any general thoughts from your experience as being a CO around fee?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know, you know, the one that, you know, you see quite a bit, you know, DOD relies on, you know, the WADA guidelines, you know, and they really are required to actually work through that process to, you know, justify what they're negotiating for their profit or fee. And so, you know, contractors, you know, have access to the DD, you know, 1547 so that they can, you know, get familiar with that and you know what the, you know, the negotiator on the government side is utilizing. So, you know, I always advise contractors to get familiar with that form and actually work through it, you know, to see. You can plug in, you know, the cost elements, and start to look at, you know, the factors that are in there, you know, the technical risk, management risk, and, you know, there's quite a scale in there that's what, you know, that's the calculation for adjusting profit and fee. And so, you know, one piece of advice is, you know, for contractors to understand that and be able to go to, you know, possible negotiations, you know, with how they, you know, how they can substantiate the factors that they utilize. So, you know, really having an understanding and data behind it is a really, you know, strong point if you, you know, are in a situation where you actually are going to be negotiating on profit or fee.
Yeah, it's really a risk-based approach there. You know, length, contract type are also components. Capital being spent is another component. Our facilities, but when I say that, so it, there's a lot of items that play into that. So, you know, we're about out of time here, but do you have any just closing thoughts on proposal pricing and response to solicitations?
Yeah, no, I think we covered a lot of ground in terms of, you know, at a high level, at least in terms of the elements and kind of process you want to be thinking about. One thing, you know, that's always, you know, good to at least have in mind, and, you know, in many cases, you wouldn't be subject to, you know, perhaps DCA audit or, you know, further review, depending on, you know, on the type of proposal and magnitude of it. But going into, you know, your process with, you know, kind of some of those items in mind will, you know, kind of help you to define, you know, what you're doing and come up with a more, you know, a more of a routine process for it that you can follow. And, you know, and look for, you know, ways to improve along the way. So I really think that, you know, keeping in mind that, you know, the government's going to use whatever resources they have to, you know, evaluate price and costs, you know, are key items to consider. And that should really, you know, kind of impact, you know, as you walk through, you know, your internal preparation, reviews, you know, walking back and looking at, you know, what your price cost objectives are, you know, are just key items to keep in mind throughout the process.
Yeah, it sometimes simpler is better. Sometimes using a simple checklist, like we mentioned before, or some of those can just help guide the response and document it and show proof of approval and review. Mm-hmm. And just to help again to make sure you caught everything and that you, you know, when you read the solicitation, that you caught all those little compliance criteria. So, you know, I know in the future we'll be talking about the actual steps in a cost proposal audit, and even sometimes with proposal response, you might have a pre-award audit for the accounting system, which we'll cover at another time. But Brendan, I really do want to thank you for joining me today talking about proposal pricing, and appreciate it.
Yeah, pleasure as always, Eric. Thanks very much.
Thank you.